welcome to More Than a Refresh, a podcast about data and the people who wrangle it. Today, our guest is Corinne Chambers. Corinne, introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Corinne Chambers. I'm a breast surgical oncologist here in Texas Tech University Health Science Center's El Paso.
Well, that's awesome. Now, using your words, let's just be clear because it is your words. This is all about saving the tatas.
Yes, it is all about saving the tatas.
When we talk about this, this is obviously a big thing. We have the Breast Cancer Awareness Month. People have their pink bows, stickers on their cars, things like that. And it's obviously an important topic. And I think a lot of our listeners would be curious as to why you're essentially on a technical podcast talking about breast cancer and breast cancer awareness. What is it that brings you to us? What are you trying to tell people today?
Well, I guess I'd have to answer that question by stating that everything that I do and everything that I practice has a backbone of research behind it, and it takes years and years of clinical data to be able to create a practice that is up to the highest level and highest standard of care. And with breast surgical oncology specifically, we're always trying to find out the right blend of intervention that gives you the best oncological outcomes. And as we have done research from the 70s forward, we're finding that less and less is more from a surgical perspective, and getting the best surgical outcomes we can doesn't always mean big, advanced, extensive surgeries.
So what we're talking about here is, one of the, I guess the popular is the wrong word, but the well-known things that happens with breast cancer is that obviously removal of the breast. Sure. And what you're talking about is looking into and performing at a level that maybe doesn't remove the breast, that we don't need to be that extreme. Is that what you're saying?
Essentially, yes. So I guess another way of saying it is we're trying to find the outcomes that match surgically the best risk of cancer recurrence coming back. So we're trying to figure out what we can do that with the least amount of harm, that's going to give the biggest benefit to the patients that we're taking care of.
And that lends us into why you're here, which is what you need is data.
Yes, absolutely.
So let's talk about a little bit, from a consumer perspective, as someone who, Command Prompt is not a major corporation, we're a boutique white glove firm. And so we provide medical insurance to our employees, but we don't have thousands of employees, right? We're 20 people. So Sure. One of the things is that we are very much consumers of the medical system. We have our medical insurance, we have our health reimbursement accounts, things like that. And so our perspective, at least my perspective, is probably a little bit different in terms of dealing with the bureaucracy of healthcare. And I'll give you an example. I went to our primary care, a year ago or something like that. I don't go to the doctor, unless you have to.
Exactly.
I had my insurance card, but it was on my phone. What I did was I took a picture of my insurance card, and I could not get the individual behind the desk to accept that insurance card. They have to have the physical card.
And yes,
it just,
they do.
Yeah, it just seems so inane to me that, I have the card right here. This picture is of a higher quality than what you can actually probably see. And you're telling me I have to go back home and get my card. and I think that that's something that people, not doctors and not researchers, or not scientists, that would be a common frustration for someone going to the doctor. And the reason I bring that up is because it's about storing the data, right? So how do hospitals, or at least your hospital, how do they currently handle all of this data?
So, in my understanding of this may be fairly basic, but I wish there was one big storage tank for all the data, but most of it is stored within the electronic medical records system, to the best of my knowledge. And for any particular patient, that they may mean you have some scanned in documents, including a photocopy of your insurance card, including photocopies of your driver's license or any other identifying factors, and any other medical records that may be pertinent to that particular patient, that particular visit. Now, as from a cancer standpoint, there are cancer registries and databases that the cancer registrars run when it comes to cancer data, but they're very institutionally specific. There's not a widespread data bank for cancer, so to speak. There are some national databases with data stored for different specialties, but for as far as individual data, is usually stored within the EMR, the electronic medical record.
So I find that interesting. One of the problems that I would imagine, being in this industry, is that the amount of data that is collected, a lot of it is certainly in your field, and in really any medical field, we want all pertinent information. For example, I am a Caucasian male. I am in my late 40s. I weigh this much. I have these various problems, whether it be arthritis or a history of asthma or whatever. But the other pro there's a problem that comes about with that, in that you are granting a large amount of information that it seems like hospitals wouldn't actually need. Why do they need my driver's license? Why do they need my health insurance card? Now, when I say that, I don't mean obviously they need to be able to bill insurance. What I'm saying is, why do they need all the information? Why do they need my full name? Why isn't there just a client ID? And the reason I bring this up is that it seems like, and this works in your particular discipline, is that if we remove PII, that's personally identifying information, and all we have is a client number or a patient number, then all of a sudden this data can be shared without violating something like HIPAA. Does that seem correct to you?
It is an interesting point that you are raising, and I'm trying to put that together with some of the experiences I've had as a clinician. So, even if we had client identification numbers, you still need multiple ways to identify that particular patient. For example, someone going to the OR with me, I need their name, I need their date of birth, I need to verify the site that we're doing, I need to verify the procedure that we're doing. So, any medical procedure or any medical visit that you're going to entertain requires multiple identifications to ensure that you're doing the right thing for the right person. So I think that would be one area where there might be a challenge to going to a client ID. And insurance companies, when I've had to deal with them and call them in regards to getting pre-approval for certain things, they also require more than just a client ID. They want your name, they want your date of birth, they want to make sure that though this is private identifying information, that they've got the right person via all these different modalities, if that makes sense.
It does actually, and the reason I brought it up, I was actually leading toward another point, which is, in order for these hospitals, and forget hospitals, in order to share medical information, there's a pile of bureaucracy, right? You have your HIPAA laws,
Absolutely.
you have all this information about. Consent forms and these types of things. And I don't want to go too deep into that right now. I kind of want to put a pin in it, but I'd like us to kind of sit on that because I think if we work through that particular issue as we continue on this conversation, that we might end up at a, crossing the goal line of a possible opportunity for everyone to have better health.
Okay.
But the EMR system, as I understand it, Corinne, most hospitals, sometimes even different departments in hospitals, have different versions of this software. Is that correct?
Yeah, so there are multiple different electronic medical records, and they can be multiple different electronic medical records within the same institution. For example, my institution has a certain EMR for the clinic side of things and a different EMR for the hospital side of things. That's not the same across all institutions, but there are multiple different electronic medical records across the United States which don't communicate with each other. And again, you can't even communicate between electronic medical record systems across some institutions. So that is a complicating factor in trying to look at data and trying to ascertain what's going on with your patient, to put that in not too fine a point. Sometimes you have to look through multiple different electronic medical record systems to find out what you want to know about the patient sitting in front of you.
Well, wouldn't that create a barrier to quality of care?
It can. We find ways around it. So, for example, in a typical clinical setting for me, I have a patient who may have gotten imaging at one location, a biopsy at another location, and in order to put that all into the EMR system that I use on the day-to-day basis, it all has to be compiled and scanned in and then verified by myself and placed in the electronic medical record that that physician may be using at that particular time.
So you're trying to find all this information. Who's managing the information? Who handles the data, making sure that the data is kept confidential? As I'm sure you're aware, there's this common stereotype that physicians or surgeons have terrible handwriting, right?
Oh, absolutely. I have one of the worst handwriting sets except in the world.
Exactly. So the questions, I mean, we have to, you have to sign off on things, and that there's obviously to use a legal term, there's a chain of custody
Sure.
with this information. How does it go from I come to your clinic, I'm diagnosed, develop with me a treatment plan, and you sign an order of whatever, whether it's a prescription or it's surgical or whatever the case may be. And then that goes somewhere, ends up in the EMR system. What happened? Are you aware of what happens after that? Like, it's in the EMR system. You know that there's this ethereal IT department, but what do you know what's happening beyond that?
Well, it stays within the electronic medical record and gets electronically routed back and forth to me, and it's electronic signature. Electronic orders are delivered for medications to the pharmacy securely. So I would imagine that all the security that's there is part of the security and the privacy of the EMR that you are logged into and partaking in.
So this is interesting because what in talking about this, we've actually opened a few doors. One of them is about transparency of care without giving up personal information, right? But the other one is, and I'm not trying to turn this into a political thing, but it's and I'll just be clear, I'm actually not a fan of nationalized healthcare. But this is something that seems like there would be a benefit to a federal system, where without that system knowing that Josh Drake has this issue, but having that information available so that you can actually, when you're doing your research and you're trying to find all this information, you put in, as I mentioned before, a client number, and maybe there's some other authenticating factor, and then everything wherever they've been, as long as they have been a part of the, above ground medical machine, is just available to you.
And I can appreciate where you're going. I think the best real life example of that that we have is the VA system, because that is a system that stretches across the United States, and it is the same electronic medical record for all those participating in the Veterans Affairs system. And I don't want to get political either, but of course that has its issues and its problems as well. So ideally, we move towards a system that at least communicates among the same system, and you can reach anywhere where that patient has been and get that information. But it is going to be fraught with challenges, I think, to get there.
Yeah, certainly. And the VA system, as you mentioned, it has had its problems as well as its, benefits. I think that's by nature of having humans run things, right?
Sure, absolutely.
But again, I would agree with you. That's one, my father's a vet and he also happens to be a nomad. So he'll end up at any place at any time. And, he walks into a VA, he gives them their information and got everything on him, right? And yeah. I think, and the reason I bring that up is that it seems to me that having that data availability, that is the cornerstone of the value of data to medicine, is that not only in a research perspective, but just having the knowledge you need to make your next decision. And if you are spending, doctor's hours are notoriously long.
They can.
Yeah. And if you're spending, let's say, 30% of your time collecting various information that we have the technological means to solve that problem, right? This isn't new. Isn't that really time that's being taken away from your ability to provide a higher quality of care to your clients?
Yes. Fortunately, some of the ways that I've made my clinic as streamlined as it can be is by making sure we get all the data that we need before the patient even enters in to see me. So I have everything I need before the appointments are made, essentially. But then on the flip side of that, then you spend time before they can see you trying to make sure you gather all that information. So it's a big balancing act. But ideally, yes, we'd be able to have access to anything that a patient medically has had done or experienced prior at our fingertips when we see them. But beyond having a universal healthcare system, for better or for worse, our patients have access to multiple different doctors, multiple different centers, multiple different modalities of getting labs, x-rays, any study that they need. And so that's all within one global system as well, whether that be good or bad in the long run, it's going to be still going to be a lot of gathering of information, which does take time. And in the world of medicine, time is money. Time is time with patients that you aren't spending, and time does affect care to a certain degree.
So it's interesting because we've kind of bounced back and forth a little bit on the, nationalized or universal healthcare, or however you want to put it. And I think that, the problem has a problem that gets created from the solution, right? So if we have a universal system, which there's certainly benefits to, I wouldn't even argue that. The downside to a universal system is that since we are very quickly becoming pretty much all electronic, is that it becomes a target, right?
Yes.
And the problem with a system of that capacity is that the entry into that system is every single clinic, every single doctor office, the little, rural clinic that's in the middle of, Wyoming, they all have access to this system, and they may not have the appropriate, I'm not going to say expertise, because I don't think that's fair, because expertise is all about money, right? They're not going to have the funds to protect this data, which means not only do you have one behemoth system for all information human, you have millions of entry points into that information that may not have the resources to protect their entry point.
And not only just the resources, the know-how, because most people in the medical field are not the most technological savvy, and we don't always have the training or the background in protecting those resources or how to manage data that obviously people with experience in this think is second nature.
That's actually a good point. You wouldn't think that a doctor is not necessarily technically savvy, but I've seen a doctor hold a laptop and try to work with it. Yeah, and it's funny.
Try to fix a printer.
Well, now to be fair,
I know, different, that's
no,
different.
not only is it different, nobody can fix a printer. I don't care how good you are. Okay. But I think that the point that you bring up is very important because there's this assumption now that technology is so pervasive that everybody knows how to use it. And I
Right.
think that's an unfair assumption because why should I expect that my oncologist knows how to do whatever with a computer outside of the basics of entering my information or pulling information out in regards to my care, right?
Right.
Why does it seem like that's a, you know, a fair assumption when I certainly don't know how to deal with cancer? I'm not an oncologist, right? There's
Fair,
this
yeah.
blind assumption that people are just able to do this stuff. And you know, as I think about this, it's actually rather surprising to me. I mean, we wouldn't expect just anybody to be able to work on a car, but
Right.
we expect people to be able to operate, which is essentially a machine, a computer, that is far more
Yes.
sophisticated, far more complicated,
Right.
and nuanced. It's, I mean, as I'm sure you're aware, I mean, you can open a website, and one website opens up and it's nice, and you read your information, you get what you need, you open another one, and it crashes your browser.
Exactly.
So, what do you think, as someone who, I mean, you said yourself, you're not that technically savvy, what do you think the solution to that is?
So obviously that has to do with the interface and trying to make sure that the interface of any of these medical record systems is as user-friendly as possible, but then that leads itself to error also in the attempts to make it most user-friendly mode of entry and data entry possible. So I don't know if there's an easy solution because all the EMRs that I've used, and I've used a variety of them, are fairly user friendly and you get fairly facile with them, but by the time you get facile with them, then you need to start using a different EMR or they upgrade and everything's different. And then the whole process of using an EMR can complicate the matters too, because it's not just a simple point and click or enter a piece of data. You have to search for the particular order, search for the particular medicine that you need. Find a particular piece of data that you're looking for within the electronic medical record. So even as simple as it can be made, it still is complex and still takes time. And we often joke about how many clicks it gets to take through one patient visit. And I'm imagining it's probably 15, 20, sometimes 30 clicks to get through a patient visit as you get through everything you need to do to make sure that that patient gets taken care of.
So we're not talking about just, say, professional education, which could bring up a whole nother topic of convincing doctors that they need to know how
Right.
to use this software. The we're talking about really education of the software developers.
That could help too. It's a blend of everything and all our expertises.
Yeah, I would think that cross training is what we're really talking about here, right? Is that, and I run into this all the time. Where it doesn't matter what industry, right? You end up in a situation where someone hires a bunch of developers to do X. It doesn't matter what X it is.
Yeah.
And the developers tend to just run with it. And they get frustrated when you try to back them up, slow them down, do, you know, user interface, not just design, but actually have people work through the interface to make sure it is optimized and makes sense. And I'm as technical as they come, but some of the user interface elements that are out there today are make no sense, right?
Sure.
Even in email clients, right? You would expect it to work a certain way. There's
Right.
a natural flow of the human, you know, experience when you're working with something. And for whatever reason, some person thought that they were going to be clever and it breaks the whole flow, right?
Right.
Do you think that there would be a human challenge? Like, do you think doctors, and not just doctors, nurses, medical staff, would have issue with take a Saturday morning and learn how to use this new software, and this is the way it works, and so on and so forth? Or do you do that now? Or is it one of these things? Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, we do undergo training every time we approach a new electronic medical record system or approach a new set of technology, though often the training is a little more global, I would say, than practical. So overall, I don't think we would have issues or have a problem with more training. But let me give you another real life example that I struggle with. This is something simple in the electronic medical record system. I want to order a mammogram for a patient. I order hundreds of mammograms a week. 1 week in the EMR, I can just enter in mammo to search for mammo and it pops up, everything's fine. 2 weeks later, I do the same thing and nothing comes up under that same search. So there's bugs within the system, as well as, you know, trying to make it something accessible for the physicians to use. And I don't know what the best approach to fix that is. And though we want to be trained, we want to be able to use these things, often when we find that there's a problem, we're in the midst of trying to do something or see a patient or take care of the patient in front of us. And that's not the right time for us to be trying to find these problems. So there's that aspect to it too.
Yeah, you certainly, as you were describing that, I mean, it clearly is a software bug, right? And you, in the normal world, people would be like, well, just file a bug report. Well, you have your patient right sitting right in front of you. You can't say, hold on, Ms. Jones, I need to file a bug report and grab a screenshot, right?
I know you can't leave till I order your mammogram, but let me call IT. Let me make sure that the EMR can find this code that I need to get back to ordering this mammogram, and we'll go
from there. That seems like it would be a little off-putting to your patients. So that actually illustrates, you know, I'm getting to an age now where sometimes I reminisce about the way things used to be, right? My big thing is, and it's not an issue of whether or not they're better for the environment or worse for the environment, right? That's not what we're talking about. It's clearly the engines are going away. I love myself a good old fashioned diesel engine, right? And why can't we just have our engines? I'm back in the day, right? So I wonder, you know, when I think about this, are you ever in a situation where, you know, you're sitting there and you certainly don't want to put your hand through the computer because you need those for your work. But do you ever wonder, like, I wish we had a card catalog, right? I want to go back to my physician desk reference, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I am old enough that I still remember some paper charting and paper orders and things like that. So it was as easy at that point just as writing what you wanted, and then it would happen. So it didn't take 10 different clicks to find the one thing that you needed to do. You could write it and it would happen. So yes, I do remember some of those older, quote, easier ways to do things. But then again, on the flip side, they hardly could read my writing. So there's lots of room for error in trying to translate that. So theoretically, the whole switch to electronic goal-based systems in medicine was to help reduce errors. But in the process, it's added time and it's added technological concerns that can complicate the matter at the very least.
So would you say that moving to electronic data systems, EMR systems, has not reduced the errors? It's only changed the type of errors you receive?
Let me think about that for a second, because it's reduced some errors.
Certainly,
absolutely.
Because you can validate, like, the ICD code, right? You can validate that.
Yeah.
But by introducing, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of lines of source code, you introduce more bugs, those types of things. And I wonder, you know, I don't know, I don't have the answer, but I wonder if, you know, it's just different errors, different bugs.
That may be the best way to say it, because for example, sometimes you are wanting to order one thing and the next thing right below it is what you accidentally click, and you don't see that until you're forward and finishing up. So there's errors in that. Hopefully the system and the clinical setting fixes that. So yeah, maybe the errors are there and present, just different. But then it does make it, once you have access to that system, a little bit easier to find out what's going on. But it is a little more of a convoluted process
Well,
as
going back to your
well.
example of searching for Mammo, right? If you
Yeah.
have the book on your desk and you open to M and you move your finger down the page to MA and then MAM, there it is.
Yeah.
Every time without fail.
Yeah.
Whereas
Right.
in the example you described, one week it comes up, everything's great and smooth. The next week it doesn't come up. And that produces and not just an error in the software, but it produces an error in client care, right? You now have an obstruction
Yeah.
to your client care. And you're a doctor, so obviously, in your mind, client care is foremost. Right.
Absolutely.
And so I would find that, I hate to say this, right? Because I'm a data consultant, right? What we do is Postgres consulting. We build complex systems to store data, but it's one of these things where maybe building these systems needs to be done in a more peer-reviewed and open fashion. Are you familiar with the concept of open source? Okay,
Yes.
so there is actually an open source EMR system. It's called OpenEMR. It's what Peace Corps uses. It's free. You can download it. You use it. They're a 501c3. You can donate it, donate to the organization. One of the interesting things about this is that any hospital could choose to deploy it. They could choose to contribute to it. They could hire, instead of paying, say, a license fee to some corporation, no, that's bad, but instead of paying that fee, you end up instead paying people to, for example, audit the code, to create a quality assurance system and liability and accountability that's not between just your hospital, but say 50 hospitals or all the hospitals in a particular network. If that would appear to be an opportunity. And I looked at it, and from an ease of use perspective, I'm not going to say whether it's good or bad. I didn't think it was particularly easy to use, but then again, it's not my workflow, right? It wouldn't be easy to use. But I wonder if using a more open and transparent and democratically controlled piece of software would allow for a higher quality for client care, right? Because you yourself would have direct input into the workflow that's being presented to you, as well as all your other peers. And you would be able to say, no, this doesn't make sense, or this bug is presenting itself.
Can we make it
Exactly.
do
Okay, that's a big
this?
one, right? Can we make it do this? And having it be open, the answer is yes. Right? Instead of a situation where you say something to an IT guy, an IT guy goes and verifies it, calls the vendor. The vendor says, well, that'll be out in release 16 or whatever. One of my favorite, we can't duplicate this problem. Yeah,
Yeah, I've heard that
it
before
must
too.
be you. But yeah, so there's something to think on there. But one of the things that we haven't touched on yet, though, is, and we've talked about some paper, one of the things about the doctor's office is that there's still a lot of paper flow, and it may not, yeah,
Oh,
it may or
absolutely.
may not be physical paper, but you have like PDFs, right? All this stuff eventually ends up in the EMR, right? Is that correct? So, are you able to go into your EMR system and, you know, search for whatever. And it's actually indexed the content of the PDF that was uploaded by some nurse.
So in order to find a document, let's say I'm seeing a patient and I want to see their last ultrasound, I would open up that patient's chart. I would see all the documents that were there, and I could sort it by, you know, radiological exams or labs or things along those lines. But no, I could not enter the term ultrasound and bring up all their list of ultrasounds per se, or look within a particular set of PDF documents that have been scanned in and see that these were consistent with cancer, for example, or these were all benign. That's not a means that we can use our system so at this point. I would love for that.
Well, I was just going to ask about that because, I mean, the technology is there. I'm curious. There are certain things that the medical field is amazing about. One of the ones that is to this day just blows me away is the MRI, right? But it's almost like the people that are building and researching and doing this incredible work, they're so far advanced in a particular field, whether it be, you know, MRI or CAT scan or blood work or whatever, but they seem to be quite a bit behind with a lot of this other stuff. From my perspective, other stuff, I'm talking about like your EMR system, the fact that you upload PDFs. Why, outside of uploading the PDF so that you have a canonical copy of a signature of a medical order of some sort, why in the world would you upload a PDF? All the information should be, in my mind, as someone who does this, in the database. When you type in mammo and a client name or a patient name, then it should just come up, and there should be a link that says, like a bullet list of here's all the scans we've done. And then there's another little button on the right-hand side or something that says, you know, click to view original order. And that would bring up the PDF. But you don't have to, because you click the first link and all the information from the PDF is already in the database. Would that be useful?
Yes, I would imagine. So I'm just trying to think how that actually would work with our workflow. And that would be quite fascinating, because we haven't begun to talk about this yet, but one of the other things that's a challenge is to do research on clinical patient data with everything in an electronic medical record system like this, because you'd have to search all through these different types of documents and texts and notes and other information to find what you are looking for. And there is no, currently at least, no easy way to do that within our electronic medical system. So let's say I wanted to look through all my males, patients with breast cancer, because males do get breast cancer too. That would take not only permission from the hospital and permission from IT, but you'd have to match ICD codes, and then you'd find these patients, and they may or may not be correct, and you'd have to look through each patient's chart to verify that that information was actually pertinent to what you were doing. So there's so many complexities there that I don't even know where to start.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, one of the great things about the database is that you can cross-correlate. Right. And everything has a relationship, at least if you're running a relational database, not one of these NoSQL weird oddity things. But the ability, you know, like you said, a male patient that has breast cancer, and you want to pull up all the male patients, maybe it's within a region, and you want to be able to cross correlate all that information. You can't do that right now without a lot of hand actual manual work. I mean, you might be using a computer, but it's manual work. You're doing
Right.
manual labor through the computer.
And often it means creating a separate spreadsheet of the data that you collected by hand through this, going through and patrolling all the different data sets that you
So
have.
basically, you have a medical record system that backs to a database that doesn't allow you to correlate your data, that you have to pull the data out by hand to create a new database via a spreadsheet, which isn't even designed to do what you're asking it to do. That's
Bingo,
the problem.
that's the problem right
Okay.
there.
Now, I would say that that is very much the problem. It's the problem across all medical care, right? And especially in your situation where you're doing research. I mean, research is, I would imagine, fairly key to your success rates, considering we're talking about cancer.
Yes.
Okay, so we've identified the problem. Dr. Karen Chambers, what is your solution?
That's where you guys are supposed to come in from the technological side of things to help us out, because I don't know how to fix these problems.
You know, I think, honestly, and I know that a lot of open source advocates like to just, they espouse, oh, just use open source to solve the problem. No, just using open source just creates a new set of problems. But what it does do is that if we were able to create an interoperable system that appropriately managed personal identifiable information, but allowed you to cross-reference and research on any level, that it would be for the benefit of everyone. But to do that requires something that humans aren't very good at, and that is giving up greed. Right? Because we're talking about one, it's a fairly well-known thing. If you get a hospital or a bank or the government as a client, it's, cut a check, cut a check, cut a check, cut a check. And these firms that are doing this, whether they're doing it for a good reason or not, don't want to give up that check. So there's that problem.
Sure.
Then there's the problem of allowing a universal system to have that much information about you. And there are going to be people that really don't like that idea. But
right.
When you think about this holistically, what I'm thinking about is the movie Erin Brockovich. Have you ever seen that with Julia Roberts?
Uh-huh.
Yes. If we had a system that was democratized and all worked together, you as an oncologist would be able to have a patient come in. You would be able to take their information, including their demographics, not just their age, but where they live, things like that, push a button, and a map would appear and tell you whether or not there is a propensity for illness within a particular area. You would be able to say, wait a minute, we have a situation where X town in Eastern Washington is showing an elevated rate of breast cancer. Why is that?
Right.
And even if it's not a causation, there is a correlation, which I would think help you in your care.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I actually performed a study similarly in looking at our young women under 50 with breast cancer here in El Paso, and created a database from looking through all the patients that were diagnosed with cancers via our cancer registry under the age of 50, and looked at them by state of diagnosis and their treatments and all those things. But one of the things I was looking at would be potentially their zip code and see if there was a correlation with particular zip codes and young women with a breast cancer diagnosis. But that just became problematic and not being easily to access via our EMR, making sure that this was a correct address, making sure they hadn't moved, and make sure that this was the address that they've been in for a certain period of time. So there's things like that that can challenge you, but having access to that in a fluid manner would have helped me answer that question very quickly and effectively, I would hope.
Okay. Well, I am not looking to cut this short because I think that we could continue this for some time, but we are limited in our a length of recording. So there's a couple of things I'd like to cover. One, I would love to invite you back,
Absolutely.
maybe after we can do, and I do mean you and I, and maybe a few other of our peers can do a little bit more research. It would be interesting. Maybe we can get one of the open EMR, which is the open source folks. On the podcast as well, so that we can share challenges as well as feats that have been achieved, and bring a little bit more
That'll
bring a
be
little bit
very
more
interesting.
visibility to this problem. But the second thing is, and as you know, this podcast is all about people, right? People and data. And so we like to make sure that there's a people connection beyond, the problems that we're discussing or the challenges that we have. And my understanding is that you are into theater.
I was a theater major in college as well as biology. So I studied mostly stage theater, but participated as an actress in from the flip side of things in the technical set design and light design and things like that through high
Is
school and
there any
college.
video out there that you would be horrified if it was found but was published?
Well, I think it's too far in the past now for me to worry about, but yeah, it's all a little bit horrifying for sure.
Okay.
But I'm also a fifth generation cattle rancher, the first generation of my family to graduate from college and the first doctor in my family
Well,
at any rate. So
now
we
that's
come from humble
interesting. Do
beginnings.
you have a ranch now?
We do. My family runs and operates our ranch in California. My dad, my aunt, and my uncle were the fifth generation to have been on that same piece of land. Hopefully, it never goes away. I will fight to the end to make sure that that ranch stays in our family if that's
Well,
what it takes. But
that is
yeah.
awesome. Where, where we're at, we have a lot of small ranches, if 50 head of cattle, that type of thing. We have local co-ops so that, they share the store space so that you can get true local beef, that kind of thing. And that I gotta be honest, I was not expecting that. I thought we were going to talk about theater, and then all of a sudden you're like, bring on the meat. And I have to admit, I am so happy about because I love, love, love red meat. I mean, we buy lamb, we buy bison, we buy beef. I mean, we have it all. We even have, although it's not red meat, we even have a rabbit.
There you go.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and wrap this up. Is there anything you would like to add? Any last minute fruitful thoughts for our audience?
Well, I think this can be the beginning of a very good relationship between health and physicians and the technology that makes us work and the technology that we need to make us successful. And hopefully, we can start to open up some very strong collaborative efforts.
This podcast is hosted by JD, Command Prompt founder and Postgres conference chair, and is produced by me, Lindsay Hooper, director of events at Command Prompt, Inc. Command Prompt provides Postgres support, professional services, custom development, and community leadership. Since 1997, we've focused on providing just excellent service, custom tailored to your organization's needs. We'll see you soon, wherever you get your podcasts.